This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It is great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, Governor Pritzker reflects on his first year in office and what's ahead. It's Travel Tuesday. We'll find out about some last-minute getaways. And as Elisa mentioned, Citigroup and J.P. Morgan beat analyst expectations. We'll talk more about that.
First off, let's turn our attention to geopolitics and the economy. Paul Christopher is with us. He's head of global market strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute, based in St. Louis. Paul, let's begin with the U.S.-China trade deal, phase one, about to be signed. Do we know yet what is in it?
No, we don't know a lot of what's in it, although we do have high confidence that China will agree to buy a lot more soybeans and maybe a few other things from the United States going forward.
And what kind of an impact would that have? Obviously, farmers probably excited about that news.
Farmers have been under the gun because of the tariffs, and so they're very welcoming of this prospective deal. What remains to be seen is what happens if a U.S. company has some issue with how the Chinese regulate their business through operating in China. That enforcement mechanism is not really clear yet, hasn't been released, and it's really not a deal that deals with or takes account of all of the really big issues in the future, primarily how China subsidizes its tech companies.
Thoughts on inflation in this new year, especially with the release of the Consumer Price Index today?
That was a pretty benign report. We think inflation at the CPI, the Consumer Price Index level, the big basket of goods that we all buy at the stores, we think that's going to be fairly benign this year. We'll keep the Federal Reserve on the sidelines. Very high bar for the Fed to raise rates this year.
What about consumer sentiment and small business sentiment? Let's ask about that one because we found out about that today.
Yeah, consumer sentiment should be pretty strong. Look, there's still a lot of jobs being created in this economy. And even though wage growth isn't really very strong, it's still strong enough to beat inflation. So each month, workers are getting more and more purchasing power in their paychecks. That's a good thing for consumers. For small businesses, though, they're having more and more trouble finding financing. They may be in industries where the demand isn't quite what it used to be. Costs are rising. We don't like small cap stocks here, and we wouldn't be surprised to see small businesses sentiment continue to weaken.
Break down for us the importance of wage growth outpacing inflation. I think a lot of workers may see, hey, I got a raise, but unless it goes beyond inflation, you really didn't get a raise.
Yeah, that's right. Inflation has been so low that even modest wage gains of around 3%, inflation's about 2%, do the math, you're picking up a little bit on inflation each month. That means that over the course of a year, most workers can afford more stuff than they could have the year before in real terms.
You know, we talked about China and the trade deal. Intellectual property, something that's come up a lot, that obviously not being covered in this part of the trade deal. Is getting something done on that important to the wider economy?
It is ultimately, because without that assurance that we have a deal in place that China will really honor and that we can really enforce, without that guarantee or that strong confidence, these issues are going to come up again in the coming year or two, and we'll be right back to where we were last year with more and more tariffs forcing the Chinese to the table. That's not going to be good for consumers or for businesses, especially with the uncertainty it creates. But let's say as a bottom line, this deal does allow some certainty that we do have a starting point for future negotiations. So for right now, it's a positive. Later on, we'll have to see.
Thanks, Paul Christopher, head of global market strategy, Wells Fargo Investment Institute. And coming up, a look at bank earnings with longtime analyst Dick Beauvais.
Bank season kicks off with reports from a trio of banks. Joining us with the latest, Dick Beauvais. Dick is a financial strategist for New York-based Odeon Capital Group. He is based in Tampa. Dick, let's begin with J.P. Morgan. A lot of people saying they pretty much crushed it. What do you make of this?
Well, I think, you know, what you saw in J.P. Morgan and Citigroup and Wells Fargo was actually the same in every case. The capital markets side of their business, which is trading investment banking, asset management tended to do really well. And in fact, in J.P. Morgan's case, the numbers were extraordinarily good on that side of their business. The banking, or more traditional part of their businesses, was not particularly strong except on the consumer product side. So the net effect is, when you look into 2020, which is the big question, is was this quarter indicative of what you're going to see going forward? And I don't think it is. I think that banks are going to struggle for higher earnings in 2020 because I think that the commercial side of their balance sheet, which is lending money to businesses, is not doing well. Their margins are under stress. You can never really guess what trading is going to be quarter to quarter. And I think that businesses like asset management and wealth management are under real pressure. I think loan losses are going to go up. I think taxes are going to be a little bit higher. And therefore, when you put it all together, great quarter for the fourth quarter. 2020 does not appear to be looking that good based upon what we see in the fourth quarter.
Is the move to free trading, is that also going to put some pressure on earnings?
Well, I think, you know, what you have on the capital market side of the business for trading and asset management, wealth management, is staggering price competition. And that price competition emanates from the fact that I think the Investment Company Institute is now saying that there's more money being managed, equity money being managed in the passive funds, which pay virtually nothing in commissions, than in the managed fund areas where, you know, income is relatively high. And I think that problem is suggesting that asset management is now fighting the biggest fight it's ever fought in the history of the industry, and it's losing. And I think that that affects trading. I think it affects investment banking. I think it affects wealth management. And that's why I'm not terribly positive about what's going to happen in 2020 in that area of the business.
What do you make of Wells Fargo's report today?
Well, you know, you got a new CEO, you got a fourth quarter, and it's a good time to really, you know, as they say, to use the cliche, you know, hit the kitchen sink, and that's what they did. They took this big hit in terms of the regulatory costs that they're dealing with. They're still changing the structure of the businesses internally. They haven't gotten any momentum yet on the revenue side. And I think that, you know, they simply made the decision, we're not looking good right now. We're going to hit this company with everything. And then, you know, we'll look a lot better in 2020.
That's Dick Bovee, financial strategist for New York-based Odeon Capital Group in Tampa. And thanks for joining us, Dick. Up next, a look at Governor Pritzker's plans for year two of his administration.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Governor Pritzker kicking off his second year at the helm with a wish list. Let's take a look at the preliminary plan. Greg Hines is joining us, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch here of what the governor says he wants to get done.
Well, he wants more of the kind of success he had in the first term, particularly on the financial side. But I think he's going to have a tougher row this time. The two biggest things on his agenda, both are going to be uphill fights, frankly. One is getting his graduate income tax approved in the referendum in November, which takes a 60% approval. That's really tough. And the other is walking the right line on REMAP, legislative reapportionment, which is one of those ultimate inside games. But he's trying to simultaneously be a reformer and get along with Democratic bosses who want to do things the old-fashioned way. And where he comes down is going to affect his reputation and his ability to govern.
Now, some of the things he's talked about, for example, early childhood education, it seems like there's going to be more revenue needed in order to get some of these things done.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons he wants his graduate income tax. He's selling this as, oh, his rich people aren't paying their fair share, so we're going to get it all out of them. But the fact of the matter is that the state still has a structural budget deficit, and that's before all the additional things that Democrats want to spend more money on. It still has a huge unfunded pension liability problem. And if we're going to pay for all that, he needs a revenue source, and that's where he's going to get it.
And Greg, you mentioned the pension and the REMAP as being the two most important things that he needs to get done. Which of those is the most important? And then also, what about political corruption as well?
Well, political corruption, What he really needs to do is make sure corruption doesn't touch him. But that has the potential to complicate everything because this governor still looks new and fresh, but the Republicans are trying to tar him and all Democrats now as part of the same stinky mess. So he's got to deal with that at the same time. Which of the two? I don't know. They're both important in different ways, Jennifer. He needs the money from the graduate income tax, but he needs a reliable legislature that's going to be friendly toward him, and that's what's involved in REMAP. They're both important.
Seeing any kind of more fallout coming out from this email scandal and the mention of the rape, the reported rape, and so forth. Any more coming out from the governor on that at all?
He was asked at his availability today a little while ago whether he believes the speaker, when Mr. Madigan. Mr. Madigan says he didn't know anything about it, even though McLean is his close buddy and kind of running mate. And the governor said, "Well, yeah, well, that's why we're having this investigation. I don't know. We're gonna find out." That was short of saying, absolutely, I believe him. And it's an indication that I think the governor and the governor's people are increasingly worried. The feds seem to be closing in on Mr. Madigan. There's more and more stuff coming out all the time. This doesn't directly involve the speaker, but involves this very close associate of the speaker. It's not good, you know, and voters and average folks out there who don't follow this stuff blow by blow just kind of look at the headlines and a little bit on the radio and TV, and they kind of lump it all together. And, you know, and eventually the governor fears that it's going to be Madigan, Pritzker, and corruption all in one sentence in people's minds, and that would not be helpful to him.
Thanks so much. Always good insight. Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Delta Airlines has an advantage on its competitors. It's the only major U.S. carrier without a Boeing 737 MAX in its fleet.
The Martin Luther King holiday provides an opportunity for a quick family getaway. We'll get some ideas on Travel Tuesday.
A new Chicago police facility at O'Hare is the latest part of the airport's ongoing $8.5 billion expansion.
And the House is set to vote tomorrow on sending articles of impeachment to the Senate.
On Wall Street, the Dow up 130. 38 points. The NASDAQ is up 20. The S&P up 5. And oil today is up a little more than 0.5%.
AccuWeather says some of these clouds could break for some sun, becoming breezy today. A high 41. It's 38 at O'Hare, 40 at Midway, 39 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Stocks are higher at this hour. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. Equities, Aviva Investors here in Chicago. Welcome, Susan. And what do you make of what we're seeing from the coming out of the markets today?
Well, we're seeing the start of earnings reports, and investors are receiving that very well. We heard a couple of the big banks report this morning. We heard one of the airlines report. Positive numbers, and I think a positive tone. That's what's going to be important in this earnings season, is what is management saying and what's their tone?
And what are they saying about consumers?
Consumers are doing well, and I think that is what is really holding this economy together. I think earnings are going to show the strength of the consumer continuing, and we are looking for management teams to come out and talk about how they expect their businesses to fare in 2020. The fact that we have a phase one deal about to be signed with China removes a big overhang and a point of concern for the market that we dealt with for all of 2019. So back to trade hasn't yet impacted the U.S. consumer, and we now have quantifiable means to figure out how this is going to impact companies' operating earnings going forward. The street's going to take a lot of comfort from that and feel confident investing.
What do we do as investors, given the fact that it looks like this phase one deal is going to see China buying a lot more of our agricultural products? Does that in any way change an investing strategy or not really?
Not really. Right now, we've seen a lot of optimism and, in fact, quite a lot of run-up in the anticipation of this phase one deal without really knowing what the components are. It's only recently in the last 24 hours that we've gotten some more detail to be able to quantify what some of this means and how it flows through. I think investors instead are looking at this as an overall positive. Yes, it is going to step up ag purchases from China, but we're also getting a trade-off on how they handle IP and technology. And so I think that's all very good. The next step is seeing how it's enforced, and do the parties follow what's being set in this agreement?
Let's talk about the banks in general. We got several reporting already. The trading income, always been a big part of bank profits, still pretty sizable in these reports. Given the trend to free trading, is that something that's maybe going to be a challenging for banks?
Well, trading was certainly an issue and why these banks surprised to the upside. Both Citigroup and J.P. Morgan reported this morning surprising to the upside in FICC, F-I-C-C, fixed income, currencies, and commodities. And that is because, really, it was such an easy year-over-year comparison. Remember that fourth quarter a year ago, the market was in decline. There was virtually no volume on the street. And so it was a very easy comp. I think we see the resilience in those businesses with that trading number so high, boosting their earnings, and importantly, still seeing the functions of a bank do well. 3% loan growth, stripping out mortgages, good cost controls, and I think, again, showing strength in the underlying economy.
But even with those strong results that we've seen today from J.P. Morgan, Citi, and Delta, why are expectations for the corporate reporting season low?
Well, I think expectations have come down, and in fact, that's actually a positive. People aren't expecting too much. We saw third quarter, this approach worked very well for businesses. The street really was overly pessimistic, and we saw third quarter earnings. Things weren't as bad as people thought, and the market actually lifted on that and did pretty well getting through it. I think we have a realistic expectation going forward. I think people are very concerned as to management's tone and their perception of how their businesses are going to do in 2020. But at the same time, I think people look at this and are starting to realize that underlying economy is strong. When we hear the banks report, we relate that to how the U.S. economy is doing. And I think that's continuing with that positive tailwind as we start off into earnings.
Taking a look at some of the big news items you mentioned, you were talking about the phase one deal. But what is the thinking among the big companies about this presidential election year and maybe taking a big chance or instead playing it safe, waiting to see who wins the White House?
Election years are always tough, and it does mean there's some riskiness for investors because who knows what's going to be said in a debate. There can always be a shot across the bow. It can cause concern, and you get these flashes of concern in particular sectors, much as we did in healthcare last year. So I think investors and management teams are looking at this, taking it in stride. No management team is going to pivot completely dependent on, you know, the outcome or betting on the outcome of an election, but they're not going to shy away from running their businesses well either. And I think that's what's important to note. I think management teams are looking at this saying, it's business as usual. We need to serve the economy. The economy is certainly strong, and managements are benefiting from not seeing increasing costs in wages. We haven't seen inflation hit yet. And so they're able to bring that operating profit to the bottom line.
So I'm going to ask you, and I'm not just looking for kind of cheerleading, rah, 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 but in general, it seems like no matter what goes on, the U.S. economy is resilient. People leading U.S. businesses know how to make money and know how to navigate it. There may be challenging times, but in general, we do okay.
We certainly do, and I think that's the message here, is that it isn't all doom and gloom. It may not be all, you know, roses either. We may have some difficult times, but our management teams have shown that they can manage through difficult times. And the underlying economy, compared to where we've been, this is not difficult. We are continuing to see slow, steady, upward growth, and that is a very positive factor underlying all of this. I think while we have concerns about the election coming, we know there's going to be rhetoric on both sides. Managements are smart in sticking to their knitting, focusing on their businesses, and we're going to see them operate well.
Thanks so much, Susan. Always appreciate you being on the show. Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Up next, it's Travel Tuesday. Places to take the family on this long holiday weekend.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we are exploring a few last-minute family getaways for the Martin Luther King holiday weekend. We welcome back to the show Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief at TravelingMom.com here in Chicago. So, Cindy, we're talking about places you can just get in the car and drive to. You don't have to deal with a plane or anything else like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially it is winter, even though it doesn't always feel like it. But, you know, planes can be delayed with weather and all that sort of thing. So we were thinking about places you could drive to. And One of my favorites is actually Madison, Wisconsin. It's, you know, it's a pretty short drive from Chicago within 3 hours, so probably not a day trip, but, you know, there's plenty to do up there to fill a weekend. And two of my favorite things to do there actually are free. One is to tour the state capitol. It's a beautiful building, and they do a free tour every hour on the hour that is even fun for kids because it's, you know, you're walking around, so they're not just sitting listening to people talk to them. And then right across the street from the State House is another really cool free thing. It's the Wisconsin Veterans Museum, which doesn't sound like it would be very much fun. And when we sort of stumbled upon it, we thought we would just pop in and, you know, take a little look around for 20 minutes and honor my father-in-law, the Marine. And we ended up spending 2 hours there because it was such a cool little museum.
So you have those things. Madison also had a lot of natural beauty. I mean, it's just a beautiful place if you're able at all, depending on the weather, to get outside. Also, some things there for architecture buffs.
Yeah, you know, it's the hometown of Frank Lloyd Wright, which we don't think about. We always claim him in Oak Park. But you can head to Spring Green, which is not that far from Madison, maybe a half an hour west, and go to Taliesin. And actually, one of my favorite things there, I don't know if you call it architecture, but it's definitely kitschy fun, is the House on the Rock. It's just this collection of just weird and wacky stuff that this guy's collected over the years. And you can pour through. It's like hanging out in a weird person's attic.
What if we want to keep it closer to home, Mel? What do you recommend in Illinois?
Well, you know, Rockford is this kind of interesting overlooked destination for people. And, you know, especially if you're in the western suburbs, you could easily do it in a day trip. And if you have kids, I always recommend it because it has two really terrific museums. It has a terrific children's museum there. And the history, the Natural History Museum, you know, for dinosaur lovers and, you know, who isn't, it's a really great destination, super affordable.
Are you finding these days that people are going for the more relaxing vacation or the experience?
You know, I think as, you know, we're trying to all get away from so many things and trying to be more environmentally sound and things like that, I think that people are looking at experiences. In fact, we're working on a story on Traveling Mom right now that we call Memories Over Merchandise. And I can't tell you how many people have said, yes, you know, I bought the kids tickets to, you know, to see Hamilton, or we're going to take them to a museum instead of giving them presents on their birthday. I think families are starting to think about that.
So we got Wisconsin, we got Illinois, we got those covered. What if we want to head east over into Indiana?
Well, you know, I love South Bend. I mean, Notre Dame University itself is a big attraction. There's a lot of free things to do there. And I actually didn't know this until I was looking at it this morning, that in 2017, Condé Nast Traveler ranked it as one of the 10 most beautiful college campuses in America. And it is gorgeous. It's just beautiful. And if you're a car buff, South Bend is also the home of the Studebaker Museum, which is where my husband keeps bugging me to go. And there's a really lovely history museum in this gorgeous stone Victorian house right next door to the Studebaker Museum. And that's another really easy day trip from Chicago.
Yeah, lots of fun stuff and very easy to get to. Thank you, Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com, joining us on Travel Tuesday.
Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday, and still to come, the one key advantage Delta Airlines currently has over its main rivals.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And Delta Airlines has just posted a very strong fourth quarter, with the company's choice of jet seen as a key factor. Meantime, American Airlines is among the carriers dealing with a MAX problem. We're joined by Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Joe, tell us, where's that strength for Delta and what's the latest with American?
Yeah, things got real interesting today with kind of two big news stories. And Delta came out with really strong profits last year. And a lot of good things happening in the airline industry in general. I mean, the fuel prices were low. They've come up recently. The domestic market has been really strong, where international is kind of weak. And Delta is a bigger player domestically compared to international. So they just did everything right last year. And now, to sort of add to the momentum, you might say, the American United had regrettably announced the MAX are staying grounded until June. And that's shocking a lot of us, because that's kind of a worst case scenario. So things took a bit of a downbeat mood today for American United.
Delta CEO seemed very positive about how the fourth quarter ended up. He said demand was very healthy and that they're competing on quality, not just price. But where would you say Delta's weakness is?
Yeah, well, Delta, you know, clearly their hub system is never seen as quite as good as United or even American. So if we can get this MAX problem fixed and American United can grow, you know, this O'Hare hub, the Dallas hub, Denver, just really well suited to U.S. in general. So that'll happen. But unfortunately for United and American, they just can't add the seats they want this summer to boost their profits. And worse still, fuel prices are up a bit, so they're looking to ground some of the old gas guzzlers that are still in the air.
So you have Delta with no 737 MAXs, and it's obviously hobbling a lot of the other airlines. Do we know how that worked out? I mean, did Delta just choose other airplane models? Did they kind of luck into this?
You know, United particularly has had this long relationship with Boeing. It goes way back to the early days, and only recently they kind of pivoted from that. You know, but Delta kind of inherited all these odd fleets when they merged, you know, with Northwest, and they tried to simplify by leaning toward the Airbus models. And who would have guessed that that's going to be a brilliant move, at least for the short term now. And their domestic network, we can see, is running like a top right now. They're winning awards on time, and it's an impressive show.
And let's, again, back to American Airlines, the fact that they're waiting until June now to fly these planes. Is that maybe giving them a little more wiggle room? I mean, they could always say, hey, you know what, on second thought, we're speeding this up a little bit.
Well, that could happen. Although they're starting to sell summer, you know, real soon. So you want to have your schedules locked in, you know, 4 or 5 months ahead. And I think the bad part is we're now in the great unknown. 3 months ago, we had sort of a timetable that seemed like everybody agreed on. Now it's like we just have really no idea if FAA is going to play hardball on this or whether June is a date that seems to be working. It seems to be a stab, a bit of a guesswork right now.
Joe Schwiederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute, DePaul University. Thanks for joining us. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.